For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Okay, welcome to Parshas Kisesa. This Parsha, Kitetsa, has 74 mitzvahs, at least. Can you believe this? 74 mitzvahs. It's absolutely amazing, and we're not going to even attempt to cover them all. But I want you to be aware of it. You know, look through it in English, and I'm hoping everybody does that before they come to class. But it is amazing. Starts off the mitzvah about going out to war and capturing a captive. That's what it says. The end of verse 10, 21 verse 10, v'shivisa shivyo. It's an interesting language. But anyways, we'll try to explain that. It's in reference to what's called the Yafas Tohar, special condition where if you see a beautiful a lady in war and you want her, you know, to take her for a wife, what is the procedure? The whole procedure where she de-beautifies herself. Did I make up another word? De-beautifies? So she does this thing with her nails. She cuts her nails. Or some people say let her nails grow out long. And she shaves her head. And if you still desire her, right, she has to mourn a certain period of time for her folks, right, a month. And then you can take her for a wife. So that's explained, right? That's not in here. Okay. And then it says the next mitzvah that's told to us after that is about if she has a son, and then it talks about this son who is a ben sura or umore. Ben sura umore is a rebellious son, basically, right? Gluttonous, rebellious son, right? And it's an interesting case, but basically it's juxtaposed to this Yafas Tohar, saying that the Torah really doesn't want you to marry a lady in that kind of condition, and if you do, no good will come of it. You'll end up having a son, a rebellious son. And as a matter of fact, the famous incident in the Torah in reference to this, right, is David HaMelech. David HaMelech did marry Yafas Tohar, and her son was Avshalom. Their son was Avshalom. And you know the story of Absalom. Yeah, you know the story. He tried to kill his own father. You know, Absalom was physically beautiful, I guess like his mother, right? And he was a Nazir also. He didn't let him cut his hair. But he was a tremendous seeker of honor, of covet. And he wanted to have the kingship. Didn't wait for his father to die and try to kill his father and rebelled, and it was a tremendous source of anguish to David, and he had a terrible ending. He died himself, and of course David mourned him, and to this day we have Yad Avshalom, a monument of Absalom in Israel.
He's the son of David.
A Yafas Tohar, a captive woman from war. Okay, that's one thing. I should also tell you that the Gemara says, debates whether there ever was a Ben Sura Mora. One opinion in the Gemara, there never was, and there never could be. The conditions are so, like, he has to be between, I think, 12 and a half and 12 and three quarters, and both his son, both his father and his mother have to speak identical, same voice. They have to coincide in their education of the child. One can say one thing, one can say the other, and the circumstances involved make it impossible there was ever a Ben Sura or Moreh. So why is it in the Torah? Another example of the tremendous deep reasons for the mitzvahs of the Torah that we do not have any comprehension for, and we have no idea why they're there. Ramban Nachmani says in this Parsha, he quotes Rambam, Maimonides, he says, every one of the mitzvahs in the Torah has a unique reason and a to'elus, some sort of purpose for the rectification of a human being. We have no idea what it is. You know, we mentioned once before that the reasons for the mitzvahs are not given. Actually, we'll talk about this, God willing, during the Torah portion of Noach. Noach locked into a certain mitzvah that gave him chen, a certain grace. It says Noach matzah chen, right? Or Chaim says, really, Noach didn't deserve to be spared from the flood either. But he locked onto a certain mitzvah that gives you chen. Every mitzvah gives you something. Some mitzvahs give you children, some mitzvahs give you wealth, right? Others help, whatever it is. So Hashem kept it a secret from us because He wants us to be mashlim. He wants us to be whole. And we need all of them. We think we need wealth, right? We'd be only pursuing those mitzvahs that give us wealth and health, or whatever, right? Whatever the case may be. And that's not, we need everything. So we're not getting the mitzvahs. As an example, Ben Sora Mora, right? This rebellious son, the circumstances are such that it can, mamish, almost impossible to happen, but it's in the Torah. We mention again, okay, some of the other mitzvahs are in this Torah portion. I'm not going to try to cover them all. I'll just try to give a brief synopsis, and then we'll go back and hit some more highlights. The famous Sheva Aveda, returning a lost object. Returning a lost object is based in our Torah portion, right? It mentions, right, also in our Torah portion, not a returning a lost object, but if you find somebody who has trouble loading a shore, an ox, right, or a donkey, right, you have to help your fellow Jew take the load on him or unload him, right? Okay, and this is right next to returning a lost object, and included in that mitzvah of returning a lost object is any time you have an opportunity to save your fellow Jew money. You know, like it says in Pirkei Avos, Your fellow Jew's money should be as dear to you as your own. Okay? You can save someone financial loss. You're obligated to do it. Right? We have cases in the Gemara, by the way, in reference to this mitzvah, returning lost objects where they couldn't find the original owner and they kept it. You know, if it was, sheep, they sat there and they fed it, whatever it was. Okay? Also in the mitzvah we have the mitzvah of sha'atness, right? Not having wool and linen together. Another chuk, right? We don't know the reason for this mitzvah. However, we do know that the first murder that happened in the world was because of sha'atness, if you will. Cain, right? Cain and Hevel, right? So if you remember that Cain brought linen, flax, right? And Hevel brought wool, the sheep, and that resulted, now this is very mystical, but that resulted in the first murder somehow, okay? Basically, this idea and another mitzvah of the Torah, kalayim, mixing crossbreeding, I think they call it, with fruits and vegetables, is you're saying that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu created is not good enough, you have to invent something new by intermingling, besides all the mystical implications involved here, which we don't have any concept of, that you're screwing up the world. Okay. So that's one of the ideas behind that. Some of the other mitzvahs, we have the mitzvah of tzitzis. It's also in our Torah portion. As a matter of fact, it's in chapter 22, verse 12, right after the mitzvah of not wearing shotness, to tell us that's an exception. When it comes to Big Day Kahuna, the close of the Kohen Gadol, the close of the Kohanim, and tzitzis, you're allowed to wear wool linen together. That's why those are juxtaposed. Then we have a lot of things involving taking a wife, and divorces, right? And the father of the potential kala, the bride, right? A lot of things about if there's a chalila, a rape, whether it's in the field, in the city, right, the penalties involved for that, right, and an engaged woman, right, this spends about 20 verses on this. This goes all the way to the end of chapter 22, then chapter 23 talks about certain types of people that cannot enter the congregation of Israel. Okay, a petsua daka, kruz shafcha, certain damages to a man, that deny him, which would keep him from fulfilling the mitzvah of pru or vu, being fruitful and multiply. So he cannot marry another Jewess and a mamzer, right? A mamzer also. And then we have certain nations that can't enter the nation of Israel. When I say enter nation of Israel, I mean intermarry with them. They can become converts. Ammon and Moab, right? Not even till the 10th generation, Torah portion says in chapter 23, verse 4, they cannot enter, right? Why? Listen to this. There's a big lesson here. They cannot marry into the nation of Israel, Ammon and Moab, right? Why? Because the verse says in 5, because lo kidmu ischem b'lechem u'b'mayim. They didn't come out and greet you with bread and water when you came out of Egypt. And they hired Balaam to curse you. Okay? Interesting. Then the Torah's portion says that Hashem changed the curse of Balaam to a blessing. Then it goes on, don't seek their peace or their good forever. Then the Torah tells us, verse 6, but don't hate Edom, Esav, right? Don't hate him because he's your brother, right? And you are, and also don't hate the Mitzri, the Egyptian, because he was your host, some host. You hear this? And they can enter Israel, right? The third generation, they can intermarry into Israel. They can marry Jews. Okay? Now I want you to know, this is amazing. We're talking about Egyptians that threw the firstborn males, remember, they threw all the male children in the Nile River. Millions of Jews died in Egypt. It's so long ago, so we don't realize what a Holocaust it really was. But a tremendous amount of Jews died in Egypt. It was a tremendous loss. In fact, the first time people question why do the ways of the wicked prosper and why do bad things happen to good people was in Egypt. That's what the children of Israel were really bothered by. Right? These filthy, rishoyim, wicked people, the Egyptians, they're allowed to marry into Jewish people. I mean, you know, properly converted and marry into Jewish people. But Ammon and Moab are not, and they never physically harmed us. They never physically harmed us. But you know what? They didn't come out with bread and water when we were in the desert. And we didn't even need it. Did we need it? Didn't we have the well? Didn't we have the man? We didn't need it. So the Torah is teaching a very important lesson. We are very concerned about nidos, right? For our children, like this young man's age, we're not so concerned about, we're concerned about what they learn in school. We're more concerned how they're relating to each other, their nidos. That's the foundation you need to build on. Okay, and you see that the Avos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, were very careful that their sons should not marry Canaanite women. You remember that? You know, and so if I ask, well, the Canaanite women were idol worshippers, right? Okay, and what did they do? Avram, right? Yitzchak, they send them, their children, to the Padan Aram, where their family was, which are also big idol worshippers, right? But what's the difference? It's true. They had this frequent philosophical outlook on things, idol worship, but they had good mitos. You see Rivka, what she did, right? Well, the wife, you see all the good chesed that she was, even though her house was stooped, you know, and steeped into idol worshiping, right? But she had good mitos, right? So that's a very important fundamental lesson for us. Idol worshiping, you know, it's like a false philosophy that you can work on a person. Logically, they'll come to see the truth. But mitos are nishrash in a person. Character traits, you know, that's deeply rooted in a person. It's hard to uproot. As a matter of fact, I think Rav Salanter once said, it's easier to learn Gantz Hashas, all the Talmud, than to change one character trait. You hear? So, Ammon and Moab, let's go over it. Ammon and Moab, you got to understand some guys, they owe their whole existence to us. They lacked the basic midah called Hakaras Hatayv, which means to be grateful. Because where did they come from? Ammon and Moab, where do they come from? They come from Lot. Lot, right? You remember? Lot's daughters had a relation, they thought the world destroyed. These are the two children. And Lot was only saved from Sodom, the Torah tells us clearly, because of Avraham. Right? That's the only reason he was saved. So Lot was saved only because of Avraham. And therefore, he brought in these two nations, Ammon and Moab, they're in existence only because of Avraham, because of us. There should be, inbred in them some akar satad, to be grateful to us. The common courtesy states that these people that we owe our lives to, they're coming through the desert, we should at least make the effort, right? Make the attempt, the offer of bread and water. Whether they need it or not is irrelevant. I want to show that I appreciate you, that I recognize that I owe you. My existence is because of you. And take this token of my appreciation, whether you can use it or not. They didn't do that. They lack this. You know? They lack it. I have it coming to me, was their attitude. You know? I owe nobody nothing. That type of Mida, right, this tremendous ego, Balgaivanik, can't have that in Israel. That not showing, not being grateful, a person who's not grateful to his fellow man is going to end up denying the gifts that God gives them. That's what it says, right? The Egyptians forgot Yosef, Paro forgot Yosef, and then he says, who's God? Remember? In Shmos? Forgot everything else he did. And the next thing you know, when Moshe comes, who's God? I don't recognize him. Because that's what happens. That's what they learn. Okay, so here, even though the Egyptian tried to kill us, but we show Hakar Satov. The fact is, we were guests in his country. I tried to kill us, some type of host he was, but we feel eternally grateful that we live there. And that was our host country, so we can never fully hate them, and we allow them to intermarry. And the opposite, Ammon and Moab don't show common decency of being grateful for their whole existence to us, and therefore they can't enter Israel. That's a big lesson for us in the United States. The United States may be passively responsible for the Holocaust. Could be, could very well be. The Mamish could have saved it, right? Whatever. We do not concentrate on the bad, okay? We concentrate on the fact that this country is basically a Medina of Chesed. It's a country of Chesed. We're allowed, basically, by and large, we've never had a time like this before, to do what we want to do, basically, even be funded by the government, certain Torah institutions, right? And we are very grateful, okay? We're not naive, we're not gullible, but we realize that this is the way a person has to be. I think Rav Moshe says this, and Rav Chazon Ish says this, that a person, when Hakar Satov teaches us from this Egyptian incident to be grateful, is that it doesn't matter if the person did 100 things bad to you. The one thing he did good to you, you got to keep that in mind. It's hard. It's the Egyptians, what they did to us, it's very hard. It's a tough thing. But that's how far it goes. And we have many incidences. You remember we talked about Moshe Rabbeinu not doing the first three plagues in Egypt? You remember, because he's in the Nile River, saved him when he's a baby. The Egyptian, he buried in the sand. So the plague of lice came from sand, and the blood and frogs came from the Nile River. He couldn't do it. He let Aaron do it. Here? Inanimate objects. Again, it's a sensitivity that you show you're grateful. And again, the Talmud statement, never throw a rock into a well you once drank from. Pass the beer. Okay. Okay. So that's an interesting. Thank you, Leah. Leah brought up the point that this only refers to the man. Why is that? Because it is. That's a very big lesson in itself. It is the way of men. Even the Goyisha women understood a certain sense of sneus, of modesty, to stay in the tent. It is not the way of a lady to go out and greet people with bread and water. Okay. That's being in the public forum, so to speak, is not considered, it's a violation of the modesty of a lady. As Chazal put it, all the honor of the daughter of the king is inside. Okay? So since that's not the way, and back then they had more of a sensitivity to these things, right? So they weren't supposed to do that, but the men were supposed to. Therefore, it's true. This is only... Okay. Alright, so Torah portion goes on. We'll try to cover a few more mitzvahs. I want to hit some more highlights on some other things we already discussed. So after about the potential people that could enter Israel and those that could not enter Israel, we're told about even keeping like a spade on you for your basic needs, going to the bathroom, right? That's discussed in our Torah portion. Everything is discussed here. Okay, and then it says, Lo tiyeh kadesha v'lo kadesh b'nei Israel. You shouldn't have, basically a kadesha is a prostitute, and a kadesh would be a male form of a prostitute. Okay, so basically we're talking about if this might be like a, this might be the source for not for premarital, the prohibition of premarital relationships. Okay, all right. Then we are talk about certain mitzvahs, halachas involving vows. Right, we have the kalim that we mentioned, not crossbreeding things. Then we go on to chapter 24. When a person marries a shana rishona, this person, there's a lot of things involving husband and wife in our Torah portion. Shana rishona is a special time and for a husband and a wife, and he should not go out in war. This is relevant to us today because really during that first year, he should not leave town. They should be together as much as possible in celebrating their first year. Okay? I guess that's the Goyisha version, honeymoon, whatever. Okay? Alright? And then we're told to warn about, we're warned about Saras. And remember what happened to Miriam. Okay? Because she spoke Lashon Hara and she got hit with Saras. So that brings up a question, you know, which someone asked her a few weeks ago about, isn't the Torah speaking Lashon Hara? Why? You're telling me to remember Miriam because of Lashon Hara she spoke. Now you're speaking Lashon Hara, Miriam. You know? No. See, I understand something. When the Torah, by you know, large, will not speak a gnai on a tzaddik. It doesn't say derogatory things about big tzaddikim, you know. You know, and we're talking about a very holy person, Miriam. So why would it tell us this? You know, it's like not a nice thing. So you have to understand that this is the biggest merit for Miriam. Right? That she's using an example, and as we discussed during that Torah portion, it was such a, it was so hard to find the Lashon Hara. You know, we all know how much she loved her brother, and she met for his benefit, and she said it in front of his face. Right? And she was trying to keep the relationship together between her and his wife. Yeah, and with all that, it's still considered Lashon Hara. How much more so do we have to be careful when we don't speak for, you know, those righteous motives, and we have jealousy and anger and all these other things. So this is an internal merit to Miriam, that she is like a banner, that even this is considered Lashon Hara. Remember that, right? So that's a source of merit to her. So it's just the opposite. It's not like an evil about her. She's being used as an example to stop others. Okay. Then we're going to have another mitzvah in the Torah, a very interesting mitzvah, again, very applicable today. Not, you know, all the mitzvahs are. But, and that is to pay a worker's wages on time. If he's a day laborer, you have got to pay him by the end of the day, before it's sunset. Night labor, you got to pay him by morning. Now, he can moichel, he can, you know, forgive and say it's okay, but you better make sure. You know, if you hire someone to cut the lawn, or a kid, doesn't matter. You got to pay him. Right? And we have the mitzvah also not to lend with interest, ribbits, right? Now that's also in our Torah portion, an amazing Torah portion. We have the mitzvah that's repeated that we had in Emor about leaving a corner of the field, leaving forgotten sheaves of crops for the poor, right? An individual like droppings, like for example, single grapes, you leave those for the poor, okay? Then we have an interesting mitzvah in chapter 25, verse 1. If there's a fight between men, v'nikshuel mishpat, they come for judgment, uvshaftu, and you should judge him, v'tzdiku es hatzadik v'rishu es harasha. An interesting verse. You should make righteous the tzadik and be derogatory, make evil the wicked. We have a hard time with this today, right? And this is a very big lesson. This is the danger of a tolerant society. Could be wonderful, but the downfall of it is that you don't fulfill this. For Yeshua Sarasha, make the wicked wicked, You don't fulfill it. You're so tolerant to the wicked that you let them get away literally with murder. So one interpretation, one way to read this is, how do you make the righteous, you know, hitzdikus harasha. So one way to vindicate the righteous is by, in fact, finding the wicked guilty. Making the wicked wicked. You hear? That's the way the verse can read. The hitzdikus hatzadik. How do you vindicate the righteous? By calling a spade a spade. Oops. So another thing that's going to be edited out from this tape. Okay. Okay. I say you gotta call the things like the honor. The person's wicked. It's irrelevant that he was persecuted hundreds of years ago. Okay, whatever the case may be. Okay, that's awesome. Torah portion. And then we finally, the Torah portion talks about also Levirate marriage. And finally, towards the end of the Torah portion, we're told about Amalek. Wipe out Amalek. Okay, remember what they did to you when you came out of Egypt, right, on your way to Mount Sinai. They cooled you off on the way. We'll have to explore those words, what that means, right? Right, and then we're told at the end of days, when Hashem gives you peace from all your enemies, don't forget, you know, Timcha Zerka Malek Matachat Hashemayim Lo Tishkach. Wipe out the Amalek from under the heavens. Don't forget. Okay? So I have to discuss, what is the evil of Amalek? What's so evil about them that they're singled out for extermination as compared to any other nation? Other nations have done this bad also. Okay, so hopefully we'll discuss that. Okay, we're going to go back a couple of highlights. One of the mitzvahs that I neglected to mention in chapter 22, verse 5, is Kli Gever. Kli Gever, that a woman is not allowed to wear man's clothes and a man's not allowed to wear women's clothes. So it means just that. It means just that. And that's why, by the way, there's a whole big, you know, issue about pants. I say that because, you know, pants today, you know, it's not so clear that it's singled out for men, right? You know, back then it used to be only men wore slacks. So that's the whole debate and why some people, more modern people, may be lenient, right? Because they look at it as more of a universal garment. Okay, but by and large, we don't wear slacks.
Or they design them in such a way that it's clear that it's a, you know, uh-huh. And,
yeah.
You know,
see, there's another problem.
On the different side.
But there's other problems with these things. There's a, you know, even wearing a dress, it's a different area. A dress of in sneas. Even wearing a dress that covers the ankles, you know, whatever it is, but if it clings so tight to the body, right, so it defeats the whole, you understand what I'm saying? There's the spirit of the law. All these things are the spirit of the law. Okay, so anyways, but other things involved that you would not have known about in reference to not wearing a Kli Gever. First of all, a man is not allowed to pluck out the gray hairs from his beard to look younger. That is considered a woman's thing. Yes, that's 100%. Not only that, he's not allowed to shave his armpits, right? I'm serious. Absolutely. These are considered women thing. And by the same token, a woman is not allowed to wear a clay zayin. She's not allowed a weapon, a sword, a gun. She's not allowed to carry it. That's considered a man's garment. She's not allowed to wear tefillin. That's considered a man's garment. Interesting. Okay? Women in the army for sure is no good. Okay, as far as if you live in a settlement in Israel, you know, and you're single, obviously, if you're married, you don't have a problem. You know, your husband has a gun. But if you're single, I don't know. There could be for, you know, for protection of your life. Could be. That'd have to be explored individually. But by and large, all things being equal, you know, this is the rule. So that's in the Torah portion. Also, something else we learned that I'll also emphasize. We mentioned the idea of midos, good midos we want in Israel. That's why Moab and Ammon can't enter the males, right? There's another idea. Moab and Ammon did another thing. Besides not agreeing us with bread and water, we mentioned that they hired Balaam to curse us, right? And of course, Baruch will change the curse to a blessing. But then Balaam, remember, gave the advice, you know, of the to be promiscuous with the Israel, right? He sent the Moabite, on his advice, the Moabite women, the Midianite women were sent, right? And they had relations, and the plague broke out, 24,000 were killed, and Pinchas knew when to throw it. Right. So, this teaches us another thing, and that is, even though the Egyptians killed us, physically tried to kill us, right? They're allowed to enter Israel, but the Moab and Ammon didn't try to kill us, just made a sin. are not allowed in Israel. So the Torah is telling you, you know, you look at things just from this world, then you think what the Egyptians did was worse. They killed us. What's worse than that? But if you realize there's two worlds, and there's something worse than dying in this world, that's dying in the next world. The point is, it's worse to make a person sin, to cause a person sin, than to take them out of this world. Because a person who kills you, okay, he takes them out of this world, right? But one that causes another to sin, he takes them out of this world and the next world. And the next world is eternal. And therefore, the Egyptians who just try to kill us, they can't enter Israel. But Moab and Ammon who try to make us sin, and try to make us lose our Olam Haba, they can never enter Israel. I'm going to turn over now. I'm going to tell you a beautiful insight. The portion at the very beginning says, Kitetse l'milchama, you go out to war. Now, a lot of people say this is a big Musar vort, that it's talking about, yes, a physical war. But as we know, there's many layers to the Torah. And on a deeper level, it's talking about that when you come into this world, you're in a matzav of milchama, you're in a situation of war. Right? In other words, you come down from a world of a peace underneath the throne of glory, whatever that means, and you come in to this world with a yetzer hara, a minefield trying to trip you up, right? So, ki teitzei l'molchama, you're going out to war when you come into this world, against your enemy. Oyvecha, by the way, in Tehillim, that's one of the code words for the yetzer hara, right? So be prepared for war. Know this whole life is a minefield. One battle after another, okay? And that's what it means. Ezehu Gibor, Pirkei Avos, who is really a strong, like valiant soldier, right? HaChayvesh Es Yetzerah, who has control over his Yetzer Hora, right? That is the big Gibor. Right? One who fights a physical war is no big deal. So the Torah tells us a promise. No kitetze lo milchama. If you go out to war, if you just go out and do the effort, you know, make the effort to battle against your yetzer hara, don't give it into it right away, automatically. You make the efforts, then we have a promise, right, that a Kodesh Baruch Hu will help you. Unasanu Hashem Elokecha b'yadecha, and Hashem will give the yetzer hara into your hands. In other words, the first time, you know, you feel that you're going to completely be overwhelmed by a desire for something. Don't give into it immediately. Try to battle it for a second. Right? Kitetze l'mokma. Go out to war with it. And then there's a promise. Go out to war aloivecha against the Yetzirah. And then there's a promise. Unasanu Hashem l'kecha b'yadecha. Hashem will give him over into your hand. The rule of the Talmud is Imala Kodesh Baruch Hu Oizro. If the Kodesh Baruch didn't help us, it would be impossible for any one of us to ever defeat the Yetzer Hara. It's so strong. There's a promise to Hashem, promises to help us against the Yetzer Hara. So that's one insight. Okay? Another one is, there's two types of Yetzer Haras. Excuse me, two types of milchamas. Two types of war. There is the war, it's called milchamas reshus, and there's a milchamas chayva. There's a war that is a voluntarily war once you've conquered all of Israel and you want, excuse me, you want to expound your boundaries. That's milchamas reshus. You know, it's not a mitzvah necessarily. Then there's the mitzvah, like wiping out the seven Canaanite nations, right? That's a mitzvah war, okay? So, Rav Zevin wants to say on that this is also against two yetzer haras. The Mohammed Rishus, the voluntary war, if you will, right? Well, that's like certain things in your life that are not necessarily a mitzvah, right? Like, you wouldn't think about, like, basically, you eat kosher. You go to sleep, right? So, he's telling you, these two wars you can serve God with. There's, first of all, the obligatory war. You can't eat chazer. You can't have, adulterous relationships. You can't steal. You can't murder. Right, and if you're tempted to do that, right, that's a milchamas mitzvah. You gotta battle that milchama, that battle desire to do that. You're not allowed to do that. But then there's another milchama. There's another war, and that's the milchama reshus. Those things that are permitted: eating, sleeping, relations with your wife. Right? You should have a war against them. In other words, you should do those with You should makadesh those materialistic things, sanctify those things. You should eat for the sake of heaven. You should sleep for the sake of heaven, and so forth and so on. That's the battle. That's a very big battle, right? Melchomis Rishus, you know, I can eat. So you can eat like a glutton, you know. You can sleep, but you can do those same acts and do them and serve Hashem with them. So he goes into detail about this. Okay, another insight is these last two words I started to hint at. Beshivisa shivyo. You should, it's a very hard thing to translate. You should return a captive person, right? You should capture a captive person. Well, double language. So, most of this I'm going to tell you is from the Or Chaim. Most of this, okay. So, first question is, you know, we already discussed from the previous Torah portions, what exactly is the caliber of a person that went out to war in the Israeli army? You know, we talked about it, that these people were complete tzaddikim, completely righteous people. If they had the slightest sin, even a sin so slight as talking between, putting on your tefillin on your hand to that on your head, which you're not supposed to, that disqualified them from war. We're talking about perfect tzaddikim that went to war. So we don't understand that today. We think, but that's who went to war in Israel. The highest caliber people. Because the truth is, that is called a shas sakana. That's called a time of complete sakana, complete danger. And you have to rely on a miracle. If a person comes back from war, he has to say a bracha. He has to bench gomel. He has to give an offering, right? Because it really, he survived by miracle. And you have to be perfectly clean to expect a miracle to happen for you. Okay? So, it bothers the Or Chaim that you're telling me you're going to go to war. Big tzaddikim. And the verse tells us, verse 11, you'll see a very pretty lady. You'll see a pretty lady in war, and you'll desire her. What's going on here? It doesn't stim. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. Right? We're talking about big tzaddikim. You know, and all of a sudden, they'll see a pretty goy, a shiksa, and they'll desire her. So the Rechaim says, the answer to this is hinted to in those two words, v'shevisa shivyo. You'll capture a captive person. Last two words in verse 10. He says, we find many times in history, like Onklus, right, Rus, right, Yisro, Shammai v'Avtolan, Onklus, all these people were righteous converts. What happens is, for whatever reasons, because of previous incarnations that we're not aware of, some mystical, Kabbalistic reasons, their souls are really Jewish souls. But they came down into non-Jewish bodies. Okay? Non-Jewish bodies. So, they are captive. They're captive in this non-Jewish body, and they're waiting to be redeemed to come back into Israel, these potential converts. So these tzaddikim, only these tzaddikim, on such a caliber, could sense this. Right? And they desire, if you look at the words, it's beautiful. It says, and you'll see a pretty lady, Eishes Yafas Tor, v'chashachta ba, and you'll desire her. You should know that's not the appropriate word in Hebrew grammar. Ba, the neshama, is referring to the neshama, which is in the feminine tense. You desire that neshama, right? Then you should take her for a wife. So that's what goes on. You know, listen, they are flesh and blood. You know what you got to do? Make her very ugly. Do the whole thing with the nails. Shave her head, right? Now she's very unattractive. And if you still desire her, you feel an intrinsic connection there, then you should know that it's a true desire to pull out that Yiddish neshama that's captive in that body. And then you should marry her. That's a potential convert. So that's the words. V'shavisa shivyo. You should capture a captive. A captive neshama. That's what it's talking about. And therefore, it makes a lot of sense that only tzaddikim of this caliber, with their holy neshamas, could sense that there's a Yiddish neshama in this lady. We can't extrapolate from him. I have a desire for Bambi down the street, you know. there's a Yiddish of a Shema there. Do you know there's a mitzvah, also in our Torah portion, there's a mitzvah not to say anything that will hurt somebody. Hurtful words. Now, I mean, this is on chapter 23, verse 17. Lo sonu zu anas devarim. You can't say things that will hurt, insult people, or hurt their feelings. Of course, that we... You know, when dealing with children and for sake of upbringing, or you try and give rebuke, a Rebbe to his Talmud. Okay, but even so, you should do it in the most darche noam, the most pleasant manners. But this is something that is one of the most overlooked violations of the tongue. We have a big concentration today in Lashon Hara, because it falls into this category, right? Lashon Hara. But the truth is, this is another area of the tongue that the Chafetz Chaim warns about. You have to be very careful not to say things that aren't to be, even though you don't mean it. But the person has a certain sensitivity in that area, whatever it is. That's in the portion. Also in the Torah portion, the famous mitzvah, of the Kan Sipor, Kain Sipor, right? The chasing away of the mother bird, if you want to take the young. So, that's in the Torah portion. And the truth is, that the Gemara says on this Torah portion, on this mitzvah, it says, anybody who says about this mitzvah, the reason that it's in the Torah is, Kol she'omer she'HaKadosh Baruch Hu Rachman, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is merciful. Right? And that's the reason for this mitzvah, we shut him up. That's what it says, we shut him up. It's a big lesson. In other words, there is an aspect that you shouldn't take, you know, the whole species, you know, there is an aspect, but to say that is wrong, because then, you know, you see, we do kill animals, we do eat animals, we do other things, and we are not to determine what's merciful and what's not. And so there's a very big lesson here, right? So it's amazing. It says in the Gemara, I guess they knew about today's animal wackos. So they say, anybody who says that Kodesh Baruch Hu acted this mitzvah because he's merciful, you shut him up. We don't know the reason for the mitzvahs. Okay? It says many other things, that you're causing jealousy and masa beracious, right? And Kodesh Baruch Hu was commanded this by the birds and other things. Okay, the whole thing there. Okay, I'm tempted to jump to the end of the portion in case we run out of time, because the Amalek portion is very tempting, and I don't want us to miss out on it. Before we get to it, though, I want you, if you don't mind, turn to chapter 24, verse 19. This is one of those tremendous acts of chesed of Hashem, where it says, "Lamani v'rachcha, that you may be blessed, the mitzvah of tzedakah," and it says, "Af al pi." That Shabbos Leandro Shalom is Kaven, right? That a coin comes to a poor person's hand and you didn't mean it to. In other words, right? This person's walking around and a quarter falls out of his pocket and someone else picks it up, or a dollar bill. Poor person picks it up and sustains himself on this. That person gets credit for tzedakah. Okay? So, how much more so if you try to give tzedakah and you're prevented from doing so, HaKadosh Baruch Hu still counts it as a mitzvah. That's another rule that we have. Okay.
Where was that?
That's part of the 24:19. That's one of the mitzvahs of tzedakah. This person forgets a sheaf. It drops out of his hand, or a grape. He doesn't even know about it. A poor person picks it up. Right? They don't know they forgot it. So they learn out from here. You're walking down the street with money and it falls out of your pocket and the poor person picks it up. We're going to jump to the end of the parsha. If we have time, we'll go back to some more insights. But I don't want to miss this parsha of Amalek. It's tremendous lessons in it. It's one of the parshas that we read, right, before Purim. This is the Torah portion, right? Zachor, to remember what Amalek did, right? Okay. So, this is chapter 25, verse 17. Let's look at it together. A couple insights. First of all, remember what Amalek did to you when you came out of Egypt. Asher karcha baderach, verse 18. Karcha baderach, interesting word, karcha, has a lot of derivatives. Karcha means from the root word kar, which means cold, cools you off. Right? So, Rashi gives the example. The reason that we're commanded to exterminate Amalek and their evil, besides that, I mean, it's enough the fact that they represent anti-spirituality in the world. They represent karcha. They try to tell you everything, another word from their mikra. Everything is coincidence. There's no divine supervision in the world. Right? They are the ones that say everything goes by like cause and effect. There's no God ruling the world. They are, right? They believe strictly in physicality. There's no spiritual essence of the world. They're anti-spiritual. They have to be wiped out. In order for Hashem's throne to be whole and His kingdom to be whole, they have to be wiped out. And that's in another portion of Amalek we're told, that Hashem's throne will only be whole when they're eliminated. Okay, but in this incident, when we're coming out of Egypt, we're on our way to Mount Sinai. It says, Karcha Baderech, they cooled you off on the way. On the way where? Right, this is during that 49 days from Egypt to Mount Sinai to receive the Torah. Look at Rashi there, and he'll tell you what's it compared to. Well, if you read the account of Az Yashir that we say in our davening, it says that all the nations heard about Israel and the 10 plagues, the splitting of the sea, and they all trembled. And it says everybody was ready to say, Hashem Yimloch L'olam Ve'ed. Everybody was ready to crown Hashem as the ruler of the whole world. Right? They had this tremendous awe of the ambassadors of Hashem, us. What happened? Amalek, for no reason, we were nowhere near their land, attacked us. And they knew they were going to get beat. It's amazing. You know, like kamikaze pilots, it says, Rashi says, it's compared to a boiling bath that no one dares enter. Amalek says, I'll enter it, I'll get burnt, I'll get scalded, but I'll cool it off for the next person. This is a Rashi in verse 18. I'll cool it off for the next person. You hear? That's Amalek. He opened the door for other people to attack Israel. He took away our mystique. Everybody was in awe of us. No one would have ever attacked Israel. There would have been no anti-Semitism, nothing, had Amalek not opened the door to show, you can battle them. Sure, we lost. Sure, we got burnt badly. But other nations will come and say, if we use this strategy or that strategy, we'll be more successful. They opened the door. They made a Pesach. Right? That's always the problem. Right? You have to be very careful many times of allowing something. Right? Like Rabbi Feldman's position, you got to be very careful, because if you open a Pesach, you make an opening for something, then that could cause other things. Well, people wouldn't have started to do it to begin with. I don't want to go into detail about this. But you can't make an opening sometimes, okay? That's Amalek. So anyways, we defeated Amalek. We beat him badly, right? They opened the door for other people to attack us. But Karcha Baderach, they cooled us off on the way. They cooled off the Jewish mystique, right? People weren't so ooh-wah-wah about, you know, attacking us anymore. And they cooled us off. Karcha Baderach, they injected a little bit of that poison in us. Just a tiny bit. They cooled us off. They took away some of our enthusiasm. Chilled us off on our way to Mount Sinai to get the Torah. Amalek, in numerical values, the same as Sofek, which means doubt. It says, Ein simcha keatoras asfekas. There's no real joy as the removal of doubts. You know, you're ever in indecision, what to do? Should I move here? Move there? You know, either way might be all right, but you just can't make up your mind. You have no tranquility until you do. But once you make up your mind, whether for good or for bad, at least you know where you're headed. You remove the doubts, right? You have a goal, okay? Go this goal, that goal, whatever. Move this town, that job. Removal of doubts. Amalek is that entity that puts a doubt in people. That takes away the simcha. That takes away the simcha of a person. He puts doubt. Isn't God controlling the world? Or, for example, the 10 plagues, a natural phenomena, right? Was the Scud missiles during the Gulf War a miracle, right? Only 2 people killed. These are the same Scud missiles that completely wiped out, you know, Iraq, right? Or was it, that's the way it happened. They just were, they missed this time. Or was it a miracle? They're the ones that inject this doubt that it's a karcha, a mikra, a coincidence, a happening. And we're all suffering from that to this day. We all are like, this balancing act that we believe in God, but a little bit of this dust of Amalek, like, maybe I can do it on my own. Maybe it was my intelligence, my skill that got me this job, whatever it is. It wasn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He enters this doubt in everything, you know? Is it Hashem controlling the world? Or is it politician, economic sanctions, political events? Right? So that doubt takes away from a whole simcha. Because what's simcha? Simcha is when you have a peace of mind, you have no doubt about it. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And thereby perfect emuna, perfect bitachon, faith and trust in God is ruling the world. That's the ultimate simcha. I don't ever have to worry whether something appears to me as being bad or good. I know God's ruling, He's taking care of it, He's running the show. I can sit back and enjoy the ride. Right? He's taking care of things, right? I have no doubts. Right? He's my father. As long as I do what I'm supposed to do, he'll do what he's supposed to do, and everything be for the good. But Amalek gives us doubt, therefore we don't have any true simcha. The ultimate simcha will be in the times of the Mashiach. That's when Amalek will be wiped out. There'll be no more suffix. There'll be no more doubt. God will be a revelation like comparable to Mount Sinai, sort of. Right? Everybody will see clearly it's God and nothing else. Hashem hu Elokim. Ein od. There is no other reality. That will be the wiping out of Amalek. Okay? So, Karcha Baderach, those words symbolize the Amalek philosophy. One, he tells you things are happening, it's coincidence. And Karcha, he tries to cool you off. Torah, mitzvahs, God. That's not, you know, okay, it's good, you should do that. But, you know, also enjoy life. Enjoy life, don't be such a fanatic. That's him cooling you off. And we gotta remember, like we said earlier today, right? That we do mitzvahs, right? Not because they're just commandments. They say the difference between us and the goyim, lahavdil. Goyim can have commandments, but they do a commandment because it's a commandment. We do mitzvahs kihem chayenu, because it's our life. Yes, we do it because it's a command of Hashem, but more than that, we know it's our whole life. You understand? That's why it says, you know, the Vilna Gaon on his deathbed. He was crying. He says, well, you know, the student asks, why you cry? You're going to a great world. You're such a tzaddik. He says, I don't understand. For a few pennies in this world, you can have such precious mitzvahs, tzedakah, tzitzis. It's all going to be gone in a few minutes for me. So that's the idea, you know. That's the idea. The idea is that even if mitzvahs, some mitzvahs cost a lot of money. Tefillin costs a lot of money. Pesach costs a lot of money. But not for us. When we understand that, that's our life. That's why we have money. That's our whole living. That's why we're living. If you look at it as a commandment, then you start weighing things. You know, how much you're going to lose, how much you're going to make, right? But if it's your life, that's it, right? So that's the idea. Amalek tells you, Karcha, he cools you off. Don't get such a fanatic. Yes, do some spirituality, but do some physical. You know, enjoy. You know, both sides of the world. Okay? And that was on the way to Mount Sinai, when we were growing from one level to another, to the 49th level, right? So when we got to Mount Sinai, yeah, okay, we wiped out Amalek, and we accepted the Torah. We said, Nasa v'nishma. But there was a little bit, just a little bit of that dust of Amalek in us, and that sprouted the seeds, and came the golden calf. That enabled the golden calf to be built. From those little seeds of doubts of Amalek, how it would be perfect wholeheartedly, completely on Mount Sinai, we would have brought Mashiach. That's one idea. The other thing is at the very end, listen to this, if you think about it, it says, wipe out Amalek, Matachra Shemayim, Lo Tishkach. Anybody knows Hebrew dikduk? You know, grammar, it should say, Al Tishkach. Don't forget. Al Tishkach is the way you say don't forget. Lo Tishkach means you. It's a promise. You won't forget. That's the difference. Al Tishkach means you won't forget. Lo Tishkach is a promise. You're not going to forget. In other words, Hashem is telling you, in every generation, you're going to have an Amalek. You're not going to be able to forget. Every generation, you're going to experience an Amalek, and he's not going to let you forget what they're about. Right? Germans, yeah, our tradition tells us that Germany is a Amalek. And if you think it was over at the Holocaust, the Berlin Wall coming down, East and West coming back together is not good news. When Germany gets back together, that's not good news. Okay? As a matter of fact, if you look at world history, it's like amazing. Communism, in a certain respect, was almost a check against the Amalek, East and West Germany coming together. There's a whole thing there, even though it's an evil entity in itself. There's a whole discussion there. Okay. So that's some of the things of a Moloch. That's why it has to be obliterated. That's why all enemies, other people have heard us, but nobody stands for the idea of uprooting spirituality from your life and taking away the enthusiasm and serving God like a Moloch does. Okay? That's why it's got to be wiped out for us to everybody serve God wholeheartedly. Questions? He comments here. There's a wonderful book, an English book on Divrei Torah. It's called Paninim. Paninim, I recommend it to everybody. But he comments in there that, from this portion of Moloch, that, again, another lesson in tolerance and liberalism, how you have to balance these things, when to be tolerant and when to be liberal. And he mentions there, to hate evil is as great a mitzvah as to love justice and to perform acts of kindness.
Who says that?
He quotes Paninim, this book, Rabbi Scheinbaum. I'll bring it into you if you'd like to see it. Okay. Now, the last thing I want to discuss, and then we'll close for today, is this mitzvah that we had in chapter 23, verse 18. We said could be the source of not having premarital relationships, that you shouldn't have a prostitute amongst the daughters of Israel and the male counterpart.
Where is
that? Quoting you from that book again, Paninim, it's a beautiful insight. Listen to this. Talks about this. And this it is in conjunction with anything immoral, vulgar, homosexuality, all these things. It says, we live in a society which is largely anti-ethical to Torah values. Thoughts which have been considered unthinkable have become acceptable and routinely accepted today. Right? Immorality, vulgarity, violence. Yeah, you know, all these things that the Torah deems as reprehensible are openly flaunted, right? They're all coming out of their closets, parading with their rainbow little bumper stickers on their cars, right? Moral laxity has so corroded our society that the individual within it, right, that society has lost their morals and self-respect. The lifestyle which is in vogue, that has become the standard for determining acceptable behavior. Everybody's doing it, right? It must be all right. The logical Jew, right? Excuse me, the loyal Jew, guided by Torah perspective, must remain steadfast in face of this onslaught of secular values. He must not deviate even slightly from the divine imperative. We must always be vigilant in order to protect ourselves from the negative influences in which we live. Right? Because we're all vulnerable to our surroundings. The only protection is strengthening ourselves in Torah study. That's it. If you don't got Torah, you're going to be bombarded, propagandized, and brainwashed by subliminal messages that the radio and TV and newspapers, even those things that look parv, they have their little messages, you know? That's it. That's the lesson of our Torah portion. 74 mitzvahs kiseisei. So just everybody look it over. So it's a beautiful Torah portion with a lot of insights. I thank you for coming and I thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.